18th, 2016, in Gainesville, Florida. And we're going to be going through Mother Shiksha verses 6 and 7, which are the last two verses in the middle section, going on the path. This is about purification, and these are about the internal, subtle purification. So just to have a very, very quick review. So the first few verses, again, were about the qualification to take up the path of going to Krishna in Vrindavan. Anybody remember what were some of the qualifications in the first few verses? Yes?
Humility.
Humility. That's, and that just keeps going all the way through Mother Shiksha. At least through verse 7 and 8. Some others? Yes?
Not being attached to being a so-called good person or bad person, and just developing one point of devotion to Radha and Krishna and Vrindavan.
Okay, excellent. Not being attached to being a good person or being attached to being a bad person, and developing one point of attachment to Radha, Krishna, and Vrindavan. Somebody else? Some more qualifications? If you have one point of attachment to Radha, Krishna, and Vrindavan, how do you see Lord Chaitanya? Not different from Krishna. And how do you see Guru? If you have one point of attachment, how do you see Guru?
Friend.
As Krishna's friend. And then our attachment to Guru should be as our friend. What else do we need attachment for?
Holy name.
Holy name. What else?
Land of Vrindavan.
Land of Vrindavan. Hmm? Yes? More?
And also, what was the proper respect for people of any spiritual path?
Not just respect. Love.
Love.
Attachment and love for people on any spiritual path, whether or not they live in Vrindavan, for any teachers of spirituality, and for those who live in Vrindavan. Also for our mantras. And then we started on the path, and also to have some either awakening of attachment for Krishna in a specific mood, or at least a desire to have that. We start on the path, and what was the first thing on the path? It was about what we...
What we say.
Our speech. And do you remember what that was compared to? Materialistic speech? Oops, sorry. That's what I meant. Oh, I flipped that twice. Double flipped that last week. Okay. So materialistic speech was compared to what? Anybody remember? Materialistic speech is compared to a prostitute who steals your wealth. Y'all remember that? Now from last Friday? And speaking about liberation was compared to?
Tigress.
And we were also to give up attachment for?
Lakshmipati.
Lakshmipati, yes. And the way we did that was by getting a? Jewel. The jewel of the love of Radha Krishna in Vrindavan. And then we had, what was our next obstacle? After we're speaking about Krishna, after we've taken care of our speech, what was the next thing?
And there's, something to do with, like, because of the different types of hypocrisy we have, we're dominated by lust and anger. And
yes, right. We had the thieves, lust, anger, envy, greed, and illusion, and they're binding us around the neck. Right? Remember this with the ropes of wicked deeds? And how do we get free of that? How do we get free of being dragged around like a dog by wicked deeds after we're still talking about Krishna? Yes?
The rule was if we call out to the devotees of Baka, be it Krishna who killed the Bakasura.
Krishna who killed the Bakasura, the cheating crane. Right, we talked about the protectors on the path. And they free us from these ropes. Okay. So that brings us to where we are today. So we've taken care, at this point in Mother Shiksha, we want to love Krishna and Vrindavan. We have affection for Krishna, for Guru, for the devotees, for the holy places, for the holy name. We're just attached to serving Krishna, not to being a good or bad person in the world. Right? We see Lord Chaitanya as Krishna. We see Guru as Krishna's friend. And at this point, we're talking, maybe not 100%, but basically we're talking about spiritual things. We're watching our talk. What are we talking here about? We're not talking about enjoying the world or being liberated from the world. We're not even attached to enjoying the opulences of God. And our actions, we've gotten our actions down. We're certainly given up illicit sex, meat eating, intoxication, and gambling. But we've also given up any of the minor actions that are based on lust, anger, envy, and greed. So at this point, if somebody were to look at our lives, they would say, wow, this person is really spiritual. I mean, these are the kind of people we refer to in the Hare Krishna movement. You know, these are devotees in good standing. These are the really pukka devotees. You follow? Everybody's understanding what I'm saying? These are the people, wow, these are the advanced devotees. And now we're going deep. Now, I should say that the other ones can also be hard to recognize. What we talk about can be hard to recognize. We can think we're talking about Krishna-related things, or really just glorifying ourselves, or criticizing other devotees, or something like that. We can excuse all of our wicked deeds. Huh? Wicked deeds, we're deceiving others, and now we're getting into really deceiving ourselves, not being honest about our own motives. So if you remember that the Vindictory verse, which we'll come to, save that set for you, it's right over there waiting for you. The Vindictory verse at the end is that one who sings these verses in a sweet voice, trying to understand their meanings, will attain the jewel of the loving service of Radha Krishna Vrindavan. As we go through, we're singing each of the verses, and this is to the tune of Jagannath Astika, so we can sing these together. Hare Chaita Praja Kapata Kutina Di Bharaka Sharanu Chesna Vada Asika Tamatmana Pima Sada Pagandarva Givada Pada Prema Vilasa Sukham Bodhya Sadva Tvama Vinitara Manja Sukhaya. Everyone together. Oh, ruffian mind, why do you burn yourself and me, the soul, by bathing in the trickling urine of the great donkey of full-blown hypocrisy and duplicity? Instead, you should always bathe in the ocean of love emanating from the lotus feet of Sri Sri Gandharvika Vidhari, thereby delighting yourself and me.
So as we said, this is about deceiving ourselves.
And Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that there are those who defeated the six enemies. Now you might say, well, this verse is about the six enemies in a more subtle form, and that's true. But these are people who defeated the six enemies on the shining road of bhakti. They're no longer pulled around by lust, anger, envy, greed, and illusion. And they think that they're taking a bath. So we've included in the book this song commentary of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, which has never before been published. And I'd like to read a little bit of this song, just the English. He says, aside from desire, anger, and the other thieves, there is one subtler enemy of yours. His name is deceit, and he is also known as insincerity. This enemy is a tricky entity and is in the form of a donkey. My dear mind, please try to understand the deeper essence. You are joyfully bathing in this donkey's urine by mistake, thinking it to be something pure. Whether you live in a forest or at home, keep away from that donkey whose urine burns both you and me. Let's escape the charm of our own duplicity and sportingly bathe in the beautiful ocean of the divine couple's sweet love. At the lotus feet of Rupa and Raghunath, Bhaktivinoda begs to see that beautiful ocean of the divine couple's love. A single drop from that ocean makes life worth living and steals away the hearts and minds of all living beings. So I thought it very interesting that he says, we're joyfully bathing in this urine, thinking it's something pure and the charm of our own duplicity. Fascinating, isn't that? Why would he characterize this donkey urine like this? So as we're going to go through all the different ways Bhaktivinoda Thakur details that one can bathe in donkey urine, I'd like you to think about what do they have in common? How are they about hypocrisy and deceit and deceiving ourselves, and why do they appear charming?
and cleansing to the person who's in them, and who can't figure out why they're feeling burning when they're in them. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur identifies three main categories of devotees and the different ways in which they can bathe in donkey urine. And the first is called the Swanistha Sadhika. The Swanistha Sadhika are married devotees, and I think in 2016 we'd have to include unmarried but not renounced persons, who are fully engaged in bhakti. They're not doing varnashram. They don't have a job. They don't have a business. So even the unmarried persons who are fully doing service. And we have these people in all of our temples, married and unmarried persons, that are just fully engaged in service, but they're not renounced. And we've symbolically shown how Radha and Krishna are directly supplying all the necessities of life to these devotees. So how do they bathe in donkey urine? Well, one way Bhaktivinoda Thakur said is, in the name of doing service, they're just enjoying sense gratification. So they say, I'm doing service, but their real motive is just to enjoy the world. Another way is to serve rich materialists instead of humble Vaishnavas. And again, the mood could be, well, these people will give a lot of money, right? We'll have a lot of money to build temples and print books, and so I have to serve them. And, you know, those simple devotees. So I had the experience one time where someone had given me a donation of $5,000, and they said, no, I want you to give this to some project you love. So I went to a particular place, which I will not mention, and I said, I'm giving you $5,000 for such and such thing here. It was a thing for cows. And, you know, we built a wall and like a new goshal with it and stuff like that. So the next time I visited that temple, they greeted me with these garlands and maas sweets and, you know, all this fanfare. And I said, listen, I'm not a rich person. I said, this was a one-time thing somebody gave me. It wasn't, you know, I don't have more in my pocket. But they treated me like a celebrity. And the next time they treated, and that was it. After that, I became one of the rank and file again. So that's this donkey urine. Where, you know, you're giving attention to people who are rich or materialistic, or, you know, they can give you some name and fame, and you ignore the humble Vaishnavas. Now, of course, we should cultivate everybody, rich and poor, famous and infamous. And it's, of course, a fact that if you make one very famous, influential person a devotee, they can turn thousands of people into devotees. So that is an important service, obviously. But if we're ignoring the simple Vaishnavas because we're giving our attention to the rich, famous people, so that's a kind of donkey urine. And then the Swanistha Sadhika also can bathe in donkey urine when they want to accumulate wealth and opulence. Remember, again, these are people who don't have a regular job or business. They're just doing bhakti and dependent on whatever Krishna sends them. So when they're engaged in wanting to accumulate opulence, while they're positioning themselves as a simple, humble devotee, just engaged in bhakti, is also a kind of bathing in donkey urine. And you can imagine that they might think this way, well, you know, we're going to get this again for our service, we'll have a nice place to greet guests and so forth. I find this one very interesting. Engaging in twisted logic instead of spiritual knowledge, again on the plea of preaching. And we've seen this sometimes, that devotees, instead of trying to become realized, and we're not just talking about memorizing the scriptures, but instead of trying to get realized knowledge, they just get into a lot of twisted logical arguments. Have you ever run into this? People write papers and they'll go on and on and on for days and weeks and months with their, it's not even good logic, you know, twisted logic to try to make their point instead of gaining realization and vigyan. And sometimes Bhaktivinoda Thakur says these persons will adopt the dress of a renunciate just to get false prestige. So they haven't really become renounced. You know, they'll wear very simple clothing, torn in old clothing or something like that, just so they'll get more prestige. And of course, we see these kind of people in the Dham a lot. It's very, very, very common. Where, you know, even they have their family, but they put on the dress of a renunciate, right? And they go out all day as if they were a renunciate, just so people will respect them. So these are the different ways in which Bhaktivinoda Thakur says the Swanistha Sadhika can be bathing in donkey urine. And remember he said that one is charmed by it. One is thinking, oh, what I'm doing is wonderful. And I'm getting pure. Why is that? Then he talks about the Parinista Sadhaka, who I think would constitute the majority of the Sadhaka devotees. And these are the married persons, or again, in 2016, I think this will include a lot of unmarried persons, who have a job or a business. People who have a home, right, they have some kind of job. Bhakti Matakura talks about that they're doing varnashram. And here we've symbolically shown that Radha Krishna is putting all the necessities in the man's briefcase. So I apologize for the gender stereotype role here. Could just as easily be the woman's briefcase. And here we see people are engaging in, you know, the study, right? Studying about politics, showing respect to elders. So these are people who are, you know, externally they're good people in the world. They're doing their duties in the world, but they're also sadhaka devotees. And Bhaktivinoda, interestingly enough, only gives two ways for these persons to be bathing in donkey urine. And one is that they're privately attached to all kinds of mundane things while making a show of being very strict. Now, again, these mundane things couldn't be gross sinful activities because that was already conquered in the last verse. But their attachment. So you can just imagine such persons, you know, while they're chanting Hare Krishna, all they're thinking about is something material. So they're very, very strict. I'm a very pukkha devotee, you know, I'm really, really strict. Do we have anyone next? Yes.
Okay. Have,
no, it's not okay.
Okay.
So they're making a show of strictness, but in their heart and in their mind, their attachment is from mundane things. And also, for the Parinista Sadhakas, preferring the company of non-devotees. Now here we see it's not that they're going to non-devotees for wealth, like the Swanista Sadhaka. These are people who are getting wealth from their job or their business. Right? You can see the Parinista, the Swanista persons, they're dependent on whatever Krishna is sending, and so they may have more of a tendency to flatter rich people or influential people to maintain themselves. The Parinista Sadhakas are maintaining themselves through Varnashram, but if they just prefer the company of non-devotees. You hear people saying like this, oh, I don't want to hang out with the devotees. You know, that devotee's too critical, that devotee's too this, that devotee's too that. And that we've symbolized it here with Karmis, Gyanis, and Yogis. So you've seen the Karmis, Gyanis, and Yogis. And there's the simple Vaishnava outside the door kind of shrugging his shoulders. You know, I guess I'm not really wanted here. Now we go to Bhaktivinoda Thakura's third category of the Nirapeksha Sadhaka, renunciates. So these would be the brahmacharis, the vanaprastas, and the sannyasis. And here he gives a whole long list of how they can bathe in donkey urine. It appears to me that the more dependent you are on Krishna externally, the more you're at a risk for this problem. Oops, do we have, yeah, okay. So the first thing is, I am a very advanced devotee. And very much in line with this, I'm superior to others. So not only am I very advanced, but I'm superior to others because of my renunciation. And I think I mentioned this in the Latua, how, you know, years ago there were these sannyasis who aren't sannyasis anymore, who would give these classes about how all the householders were dogs, you know, and that the best we could hope for was to be a ditch digger and things like that. You know, and this is, you know, I'm better than you, putting down the people who aren't as renounced. And this is very, very common. We had in 1975 in ISKCON what Sadhguru Maharaj called in the Lilamrita the Sannyas Grahastha Wars, where, you know, there were sannyasis who were saying that no temple presidents should be grahastas, and they would go to the temples and they would steal the grahastha men out of the temples and take them out on book distribution. Yeah. And I tell you, a lot of this mentality still exists. For example, there's temples in India. I remember speaking to one of the leading preachers at one of our temples in India. And I said, so Prabhu, what do you do? And he said, well, we go to the colleges and we do programs there for the students. And any of the men who are interested, we take their contact information. And I said, that's lovely, Prabhu. What about the women? Oh, we don't intentionally exclude the women. We just don't take their contact information. And then he said, then we have follow-up programs, you know, for anyone who's really interested. And any of the men who come there that are really interested, we get them into a long-term education program. I said, suppose some women come to the program. He said, well, we don't intentionally exclude the women, but we don't have any follow-up programs for them. And I said, Prabhu, if you intentionally excluded the women, what would that look like? Funny look on his face. And if you went to the temple, there were literally 150 men and 10 women. And I said to this devotee, most of these men that you make devotees are going to marry. Who are they going to marry? I said, even if you don't care that all the women in India go to hell, if all you care about the men, do you want them to have some nice wives? And he got this look on his face and he said, actually that's been a problem for us. So this is the mood of the donkey urine for the renunciate is, I'm so much better than those householders. They have two cars in their garage and three bottles of shampoo in their closet, and I am superior simply because I'm in the renounced order. And another kind of donkey urine is to collect more food and money than required. And we saw this was also a problem with the Swanistha Sadaka householder who's just doing full-time bhakti, this over-collecting. And this one is particularly interesting and a problem, as I mentioned, in every religious tradition in the world. That in the name of preaching, that we're really trying to impress the opposite sex. And we were talking the other night here that basically you're trying to pull subtle energy from the opposite sex. So the principle of the ashram system is that if you need energy from the opposite sex in order to function, then you get married and you do it legitimately. You have to do a sacrifice. If you want to pull male energy, female energy, you have to do a sacrifice. You have to take care of your spouse. You have to take care of your spouse when they're happy, when they're not happy, right? When they're behaving nicely, when they're a lazy bum. You have to take care of the children. You have to maintain a house. You have to do all this. You have to do, what is it? Sarvagatam Brahma Nichi Yajna Pratishtha. You have to do a yajna. And if you're not doing the yajna, if you're taking this energy without doing the yajna, then you are a? You're a thief. You're a thief. So one of the ways a person can tell, should I marry or not, is, am I dependent on pulling energy from the opposite sex in order to be able to function? Do I need that in order to function? Then, well, go ahead and pay for it. Don't steal it. So when the renunciates are stealing this, and sometimes you also see this, frankly, although he didn't list this for householders, maybe it wasn't the problem in his time, but we see this sometimes even for householders. I've seen even married men who are preaching in such a way to try to attract so many women besides their wife. It does happen. And it's a problem. It's really a problem. And I don't know what to say about it. And often it turns into something gross, isn't it? It doesn't always stay on the subtle platform, unfortunately. And this is a problem. It's in a problem in the Hare Krishna movement. It's a problem among the whole yoga society. It's a problem with the Christians, with the Jews, with the Muslims. It's a general problem. But it's especially a problem when you have a class of renunciates who are externally being a renunciate and pulling this energy. Yes?
It seems like this is a human condition because it's so widely spread.
Oh, it is.
So if one, for example, recognizes that could be one of the conditions that one may have, then he has to understand it needs to be purified, right? Because if it's there, it's better to purify that, even if even if it happens to householders.
It does.
So whether you're in the renounced order of life or householder life, then it's something one has to uproot.
One has to uproot, right? Yeah. Although it's more common in renunciation.
So if you
recognize, because the householder has some legitimate source.
So then if they recognize it, then they can...
Well, this is all about, all this donkey urine is about deceiving yourself. That's what it's about. This whole verse is about being self-deceptive. So the person doing this does not have an awareness that this is what they're doing. So we had the one person who was excluding the women and the householders without realizing it, because he thought being a renunciate was so much better. And then you have the other person that on the plea of being inclusive and preaching to the women, is really just trying to pull their feminine energy. in an illegitimate way. So you have those two different, you know, what is attachment and aversion? Yes?
I was just wondering, so actually I'm trying to refresh myself. Is it still 25 years that a young man should, how many years should a brahmachari remain brahmachari until he actually decides?
Well, that's a very good question, and that's a little peripheral to manashiksha. But the principle is that Prabhupada said 24 is maximum at that. A man should marry by 24. He said a woman by 16, which is very radical in the modern Western society. But those were the maximum ages.
Maximum.
Yeah. He said, Prabhupada says in the first canto, this is what Prabhupada says. You should.
Yeah.
Don't shoot the messenger, please. He says there should be compulsory marriage of all women by 16 and all men by 24. I don't think you can do that without extended family. And I don't think you can do that without people having jobs that aren't dependent on having a master's degree kind of thing. You know, I don't think you can just take that and just stick it on modern society. But the fact that people in modern society are delaying marriage is causing a lot of problems, because most of the people who are delaying marriage are not celibate. That's just the fact. You know, as my youngest son said, it's like they're going through so many marriages and divorces over and over and over again in all their relationships. And a lot of people who are celibate are doing it through repression, which is making up all kinds of problems. So there's not that many people, it's a small percentage of people, who can skip the grihastha ashram. And that's, in order to skip the grihastha ashram, you need to be able to skip two things. You need to be able to skip the need to draw sexual energy from the opposite sex, even in a subtle way, in order to function. Basically, in order to do that, you have to have the transcendental male and female energy manifesting in your heart. And the other thing you have to be able to skip is varna, because varna is only for the grihastha. Varna is how you earn your livelihood. And the only person allowed to earn a livelihood is the married person. So like Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, because I wanted to earn money, therefore I got married. With the idea, if you want to earn money, at least you have to take care of a spouse. The concept that I'm earning money and therefore I have my own place and I just take care of my own self and I just do whatever I want with it is completely against the ashram concept. If I'm earning money, minimum I'm taking care of a spouse. And then I'm giving also charity to the other orders. I don't just, you know, people brag today, well, I have so much money because I don't have a wife, I don't have a husband, I don't have children, right? And I can live this lavish lifestyle with all. Don't you see people like this?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, I can travel the world and I can buy fancy clothes and I can buy all the fancy technology because I'm not burdened with a spouse. And people say, I don't want to have children. I mean, I frankly even know some devotees, I don't want to have children, it'll interfere with my preaching. And you go to their home and it's like this incredibly opulent home. And you're thinking this money should be spent on children. You know, the principle of sacrifice is messed up. Now, again, this is really peripheral. I don't want to spend too much time on it. But the Vedic idea is that by age 25, the student decides, am I going to get married or am I going to become a lifetime renunciate? That decision is not made at 30 or 35 or 40 or 45 or 50 or 65. And someone all of a sudden says at 65, you know what? I really think I should get married. That should not happen, and it is happening. It's happening all the time. All the time. People come to me, you know, I'm really thinking, should I marry or not? Or how old are you? 45. You know, so that shouldn't happen. And then if the student decided in consultation with Guru and through honest introspection, by 25, I'm not going to marry, then they're not in the brahmachari ashram anymore, generally. A few stay in the brahmachari ashram lifelong and just serve as sannyasi, as a menial servant. But most, they are brahmachari in the sense of being celibate, but they move on to preparing for sannyas, which means they go on to the vanaprastha ashram. And they stay in the vanaprastha ashram as a preparation for sannyas. And the advantage of that is that the brahmachari ashram keeps you very dependent. The brahmachari ashram is for children. and teenagers. It's not for adults, except for the rare, rare, rare adult who's going to be a student and a servant their whole life. As soon as you're teaching, you're not in the Brahmacharya ashram anymore. And Vanaprastha, you're traveling to holy places, you're preaching, and what I see is a lot of our older brahmacharis who've decided not to marry are not in the Brahmacharya ashram, they're in the Vanaprastha ashram, and we just don't recognize them. Judhakarma has been in the Vanaprastha ashram for years. Krishna Kshetra Maharaj for many years, he was in the Vanaprastha ashram. Dravida Prabhu, Amala Bhakta, now Sannyas, but for years, those people, they weren't in the Brahmacharya ashram. They were very independent. The Vanaprastha is more independent than the Grahastha. You know, they were independent. They had their own preaching program. They were very oftentimes traveling, right? Does that all make sense to everybody? They weren't in the situation anymore that if they weren't called for dinner, they wouldn't eat. You know, we weren't in that kind of a situation where just someone says, okay, at 9... I mean, I remember when I first moved into the Brahmacharini ashram. Okay, at 9:15, you polish the silver. At 9:30, you take prasadam. At 9:45, you make the garlands. At, you know, 10:30, you go out on sankirtan. It would be intolerable for most people 28 years old. You know, psychologically, it'd be intolerable. And I see that some of our brahmacharis get married just to escape that, you know, intense being under the thumb instead of going on and being vanaprastha.
I just have one super great burning question.
It's burning, all right.
Okay. Well, look, and it's probably a stupid one, but when you were talking before, so how do these people are not seeing that Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Srila Prabhupada were grihasthas? How could they feel so superior to grihasthas?
That's a very good question. So how does anybody get into any of these donkey urines? That's a very good question. Let's hold that for a little bit. Okay, so here's another one. This is another one for the renunciates. So again, this is very much like the Swanista, that befriending materialistic people hoping for wealth and neglecting their Krishna consciousness. So not just befriending, but neglecting their sadhana. I don't know what you can see on the screen, but the altar is kind of neglected. The beads are on the floor. The shastra is on the floor. And here's this renunciate just interested in getting money. And again, I've seen this happen. I've seen people, well, I don't have time to chant my 16 rounds. I've got to go out and meet with that millionaire today. You know, I've got to meet with the famous people and the government officers. And I don't have time to read and I don't have time to study because I'm doing such important work. And another way for the renunciate is being anxious about collecting wealth. And this is also very common. You know, you have three preaching engagements to go to, and you pick the one where you're more likely to get money. And so you're meditating on this. Instead of meditating on your service and pleasing Krishna, you're meditating on how can I collect wealth. And I'm sure ostensibly many times, how can I collect wealth so I can do this service and that service and the other service. Another donkey urine for the renunciates is being more concerned with the external dress and the regulations than devotion for Krishna. You know, I got to have the silk saffron perfectly ironed, and I have exactly the right mudras, but I'm neglecting, again, you see the altars are neglected, the beads are on the floor, the shastra is on the floor, so this is symbolic. Obviously, it's not literal, the picture. It's a symbolic picture. But the concept that one is neglecting one's real sadhana, and one is being concerned more with the externals. I'm thinking, yes, I'm very renounced. And this was the hardest one to illustrate. Neglecting the main purpose of spiritual life and keeping their hearts locked up in a box. And let's see exactly how Bhaktivinoda Thakur talks about this. Actually, it's a little harder probably to find this than in the book. Okay, so he puts it, overlooking or neglecting the main purpose of spiritual life. So in other words, you're doing your spiritual life, but you've forgotten why you're doing it. You've forgotten the heart, you've forgotten the essence. So looking at all of these, What do you see as the common thread?
There's a few.
A few, okay. One?
One is the neglect of one's actual own genuine spiritual practice.
Mm-hmm.
And putting on a false image of oneself or a false facade, kind of.
A facade.
Yeah, they're putting on a show.
Okay. Okay. Another one, Sita?
Doing the externals and totally missing the internal mood.
Okay, doing the externals but not taking care of the internal mood. Remember, these people are doing the externals, okay? We took care of the externals in the previous verse, so they are doing the externals, yes?
A sense of, or an illusion, like not aware of something.
Yes. Yes.
Something's covering their
mind. Yes. What are they not aware of? Yes.
The donkey urine?
They're not aware of the donkey urine. They think it's a bath. They think it's a bath. And I can give one example for myself that I think illustrates this very nicely. So I used to, run Gurukula schools. And in fact, I just heard someone say something similar to this the other day that I said for so many years. And I would say, well, in ISKCON, we're always collecting money for things other than Gurukula. Which is true. That's true. And it's a problem. And it should be fixed. I was right. It's not that what I was saying was wrong. So I was asked at one point, well, I'll go back even a little before that. I was praying to Krishna and I said, my dear Krishna, you always seem to purify me through suffering. And I'm getting kind of tired of this. Do you think you could give me a try? Give me a chance. Could you purify me through something that's completely ecstatic? Yeah, somehow in our Krishna consciousness movement, we have this sort of bring on the suffering Kunti, kind of a Kunti parody. It's a parody because when Kunti suffered, Krishna walked in the door. It's your purification, Prabhu. Everything's our purification. The Glubjamans are purification too. But anyways, I was saying, please, let me be purified through ecstasy. So then we were offered some service to work on a digital encyclopedia of Krishna consciousness for the purpose of making money to build the Mayapur temple. This was a long time ago, before the present design. And it was just so exciting. Everything, our tickets were paid and we went there and I got to do the service that was like designed for Urmila's nature. If someone had just analyzed my nature and designed a perfect service, it would have been this. So I had to research Krishna conscious topics and then I had to condense them and rewrite them so they'd fit in little boxes on the computer, which is very hard. If you just have one letter too much, it doesn't fit. So I'd have to keep rewriting the sentences to make it fit. So I got to research Krishna consciousness, write about Krishna consciousness, play with words, and solve puzzles. And I was just thrilled. I had so much energy. I could work easily. I was working 16 hours a day without getting tired. And we were in a beautiful place out in the country. The prasadam was wonderful. My granddaughter just asked me yesterday, Grandma, where have you gone that has the best prasadam? So I said, that was one place. It was just amazing prasadam. The kirtans were incredible. The devotee association was wonderful. The way the service was organized was really nice. It was real esprit de corps. It was a wonderful team service. The manager had just the right mix of leaving you alone to do it the way you wanted and getting involved when he needed to. It was like perfect. Man, every single thing about it was perfect. So I'm writing about all these things about Krishna consciousness. Except for one section I wasn't writing about. I wasn't writing about the temple. I wrote about karma and reincarnation, I made a whole philosophical encyclopedia all about Prabhupada's life, that was so much fun, and all about, Gurukula and all about the arts and all these different things. And then there was nothing left to do but the section about the temple. And I went to work on it and I couldn't do it. I just got stuck. I couldn't do it. And I was sitting there all day thinking, what's wrong with me? Why can't I write this? I just couldn't. Every time I went to type, I didn't do anything the whole day. And at a certain point, it was like the light went on in my heart. And I understand you can't do it because you're filled with envy. All of a sudden I understood that all of my enthusiasm for why isn't the money going to Gurukula? Why is it going to this temple and this thing and that thing wasn't spiritual. Do you understand? I thought it was very spiritual. In fact, I thought it was the nicest thing I had to offer to Srila Prabhupada. Of all of the things that I did, my japa, my Gayatri, teaching the kids, reading Prabhupada's books, teaching, everything I did, I thought that the crown jewel of all my service was my dedication to Gurukula. Prabhupada said it's our most important project, so it is our most important project, and I'm dedicated to it. Me! Ha! And all that money going to the temple should be going to this most important project that Prabhupada said it was our most important project, and that's what I'm dedicated to, and I'm wonderful, and that's my service. And in the middle of all this ecstatic service, Krishna said, this is not a jewel, it's a pile of poop. And had I read Manashiksha, I would have understood it's not an ocean of love, it's donkey urine. And I saw it like that. The vision I had was that I was putting this poop on the altar. That was the picture that came to my mind. That I was holding this thing I thought was a jewel and giving it to Prabhupada, and Prabhupada's looking at it and going, yeah. But for years, I maintained this mentality that what I was doing was service. That my motive was service, that my mood was service. I liked the mood. I was charmed by it. Do you all understand this?
Yes.
I admired it in myself. I was proud of it in myself. Every time I had this mood, just like Bhaktivinoda Thakura Rai, I thought, this is cleansing me. This is purifying me. This is so charming, this mood that I have. And it was all a bunch of donkey urine. Now, how do you know it's donkey urine? It burns. It burns. And it burned me so much, I couldn't write about the temple. You follow? I couldn't. My heart was burning so much, I couldn't type the words. And we can tell we're bathing in donkey urine when we have a burning feeling when other people are successful in some way. When other people are getting the fame or the money or the facility, or when other people are making advancement, when we see that they're in ecstasy in the kirtan and we're just wondering about when we're going to go to sleep. You know, we get this burning feeling. Why are they in ecstasy? Right? And I'm embarrassed to say, it took me years to recognize that. I mean, I did thank Krishna. Thank you for showing me through ecstasy rather than through suffering. And if I didn't tell all of you, you wouldn't even know about it. It was very private. It was just me sitting in my room with my computer. You know, and once I faced that and looked at it and said, you know, I don't want to. I mean, I hadn't read Manashiksha at the time. But I don't want to offer a bunch of poo. And then when I let go of it, then I could write about the temple. Does that make sense to everybody? And then I could write about it with enthusiasm. And now, whenever I hear somebody saying, why are they giving all the money to the Mayapur temple and why aren't they giving it to the kids? I think, you know, better be careful about that. You know, be careful. What's driving you to say that? Yes, we should give money to the kids. I'd love it if we'd raise a few billion dollars to give money to the kids. Yeah, the first person to say that. But be careful about it. So what happens when people are burning in this donkey urine in the name of spiritual life? They're doing... These are strict devotees, my dear friends, okay? They're strict devotees. But their heart's not feeling bliss. Their heart's burning. What do you think they do about this burning? Any idea? Yes.
One question.
Yes.
I have one from before, but this one is about what you're talking about now. You're talking about what the people who are putting on the show. What do they do about it? Or
what should they do about it? How do they usually respond to it?
How do they usually respond to it? I think they probably ignore it.
They definitely ignore it, but it's kind of hard to ignore a burning sensation when you're hoping for bliss. What do you think?
Sometimes you want to share it.
Okay, you want other people to burn with you. Yes, definitely. Oh, definitely.
The lesson of burning.
Yes, misery loves company. Oh, for sure. And also when you share it, then other people are justifying your own mentality. Mm-hmm. Yes?
Does it harden your heart?
I'm not sure if it hardens it, but it certainly burns it. Yes?
Sometimes I've seen people just kind of, embed themselves even more in that position.
Oh, very much so. Very much so. They embed themselves even more, and they, you know, they... Rayadasa Swami said this is a very big donkey. But maybe they even get a few of them together. Yes?
Sometimes you might see it, and you might be so embarrassed that you can't even admit it to yourself, and you just, do it even more and justify it and have this, really angry attitude about it.
That is so deep, what you just said. You know, it's interesting. C.S. Lewis wrote this book called Screwtape Letters. And he talks about, which is one of Jayadurja Swami and Ravindra Shukrabhu's favorite books, so I'm in good company. But C.S. Lewis talks about there how when we're not right with God, we actually try to avoid him, like you'd avoid someone to whom you owe money. So yeah, that every once in a while, if we may become aware, because Krishna will show you. He will periodically say, hey, your motive is wrong. It's not good. You're doing this for the wrong reason. Doesn't he do that?
Yeah.
And sometimes even other people may say, excuse me. And then we feel so embarrassed that we push it away and try to cover it up even more and go even deeper into it as a way of justifying ourselves. Another thing I've seen is, like you said, anger. I believe that a lot of the devotees who become very angry and very critical are in this situation. Because they blame others for their lack of advancement. After all, look, okay, I'm doing everything right, folks, okay? At this point, I'm talking about Krishna, and I'm following all the rules, and I'm strict, and I'm pukka, but I'm not making much advancement. I'm not getting all the results. So it must not be the fault of the process. It must be the fault of my guru, the GBC, the temple president, you know, my wife. I get a lot of things like this, you know. It's all my wife. If I just could leave my wife, then I'd be Krishna conscious. I get this a lot. Just if I could leave my husband, if I didn't have kids, you know, if I didn't have this job. And they get very angry and often very blaming. Another thing Jiva Goswami says is that people in this situation will start to identify advancement in terms of the externals. How many books I've distributed, how much money I've collected, how many temples I've built. That's their focus. And that's how they start to identify themselves as being advanced. Does that make sense? I must be an advanced devotee because I always come to Mangala Arati on time. I must be an advanced devotee because, you know, I fast from water and every Janmashtami and Ekadasi and the next day. And, you know, I must be an advanced devotee because I've done a Dandavat Parikrama of Govardhan. I must be an advanced devotee because I've collected $3 billion to build 10 temples, and, you know, do you follow?
Mm-hmm.
With me? And they start thinking like that. And I think some people just resign themselves. Well, I guess this is all there is. I guess this is Krishna consciousness, and I'm just going to suffer with this burning, and I'm going to, at least Krishna's got my score sheet, and he's going to see all my japa and all my tapasya, and I'm going to buy my way back to Godhead, which is what offense on chanting.
The karma kanda one?
Yes, exactly. Exactly. You're thinking that bhakti and chanting is a kind of materialistic ritual that's going to buy you back to Godhead. Because you're not experiencing the happiness from within. And so the cure for this, Raghunath Das Goswami says, is to bathe in an ocean of love instead of bathing in the donkey urine. But I really think that first of all, you got it, what I said yesterday, you got to look up at the shower head. And, yeah, I can't say it in polite company, but it's a blank's blank. Sorry about that. One of these really gentlemen, Indian gentlemen in Houston came to me and he said, Mataji, this is very crude. So some of the Indians, they're complaining that you are very crude. I said, well, I'm not crude. Raghunath Das Goswami here. He was crude. What can I do? What I find good about these crude examples is that we can remember them and they arrest our thinking. We don't just think, well, yeah, you know, I'm enjoying having all the ladies smile at me, but it, no, wait a minute, that's donkey urine.
Yeah.
It's not some little thing. I'm thinking, oh yeah, this will be a big, good preaching engagement. Those are the people that live in the million-dollar houses. Oh, wait a minute, that's donkey urine. And you remember that kind of thing. You know, oh, there's a chance to go to the kirtan, I'd rather watch the football. Oh, that's donkey urine. And you remember that kind of thing. Much more than if we say, oh, it's not so good. So what does it mean to bathe in this ocean of love at the feet of Gandharva and Giridhari? So Gandharva is a name for Radha as the artistic singer. Giridhari is a lifter of Govardhan Hill. So I thought we'd read a little bit here from Bhakti Vinod. He said, one should bathe in the ocean of nectarian love that emanates from the lotus feet of Sri Gandharva Giridhari. Gandharva refers to Srimati Radharani, who's the internal energy. Giridhari refers to Krishna, who possesses all unlimited potencies. Here one is advised to bathe in the ocean of nectar of transcendental spiritual transformation. Spiritual transformation. To change our heart. To really want to change our heart. And Bhakti Vinod has some prayers here to Radharani. I'm not going to read all of them. He says, having offered obeisances in these ways, I, a distressed soul belonging to you, bathe you with sweet words while rolling on the banks of the Yamuna. Although I am unfit, an offender with a crooked mind, please bestow upon me a fragment of the gift of service to you. This unhappy soul is not fit to be neglected by you. If you have a butter-soft heart that melts complete constantly by the warmth of your compassion. And he gives all these nice prayers to Srimati Radharani. He says, one's deceitful nature is removed when the heart is completely pure with humility, which of course doesn't really happen until the next verse. Taking shelter of such names and soaking one's mind in the spiritual rasas, please ceaselessly wander around in the land of Vrindavan, which can also be mentally. Meditating on Sri Sri Radha Govinda's pastimes throughout the periods of the day, Astakaliya Lila, then the mind purified by humility will not give any space to deceit. Otherwise, the moment any other thought is given an opening, deceit again attacks. So what does this mean? This means that when we're doing our services, our various services, that we should have the mood of, I'm doing this to please Krishna. I'm doing this for absorption in Krishna. I'm doing this for a transformation of heart. I'm not doing this for money. I'm not doing it to impress the opposite sex. I'm not, you know, I'm doing this. I'm not doing it so materialistic people will be impressed with me. I'm doing this for a purification of heart, for transformation. And to have that as our mantra and be willing to look at, you know, what am I bathing in? What's really going on in my heart? And how refreshing and wonderful will it be to bathe in this ocean of love? I mean, even that story I was telling you about myself, I tell you, when I let go of that and Krishna removed it, we can't remove it, but when Krishna removed it, it was such a relief. You follow? I'd been holding on to this thing for so long, and when I said, I don't want this anymore, and it was gone, then you just did this, imagine this ocean of nectar, right? And you just feel this utter relief. Yes.
When you said this earlier, I had a question about this, and it's maybe a little more philosophical than what you said, but when you let go of it, does that mean internally you're just thinking that Krishna's in control and I'm not in control of this issue, or like, what was your thought?
That's certainly part of it, okay. But as Bhaktivinoda Thakura said, we're charmed by this donkey urine. It charms us. We think it's purifying. We think it's cleansing.
Okay.
It's something that we like. It's something that we're holding on to. Mm-hmm. It's something like if you've ever gone to the home of a pack rat or the closet of a pack rat even, you know, and if they invited you over and said, would you please help me clean out my closet? And you pick up something and you say, you know, well, look at this. You know, it's rotten and it's moldy. And they say, but my grandma gave it to me. So it's something like that. You know, we have all these anartas. We have all these ill motives that we're holding on to, thinking that they're very wonderful. I thought that my envy of people collecting for temples instead of Gurukula was giving me what? What did I feel was giving me?
Spiritual ecstasy.
Well, mostly I thought it was giving me what, do you think?
Discernment.
I mean, you were saying something like the best thing you have to offer to a Prabhupada.
I thought it was the best thing I had to offer to Prabhupada. What did I think it was doing for me?
Purifying
him. I thought it was purifying me, for sure. I thought it was giving me something.
Like spiritual credit?
Oh, yeah, I thought it was giving me spiritual credit. No, we haven't even think of it as status. I mean, working for Gurukul does not give you status in the Hare Krishna. Wasn't that one. I've done other things, but not that. Not that, yeah. Huh? I thought it was pleasing Srila Prabhupada. I thought it was giving me an impetus. I thought it was my energy, my impetus. It was my reason for getting up in the morning and doing my service and taking care of the kids nicely and so forth. I considered it like my motor. You understand?
Yes.
As to what was it doing for me? So therefore I was charmed by it. Does that make sense? So when I say you have to let go of it, you're letting go of your supposed benefit you're getting from it. That's what you're letting go of. You see it for what it is. You see, you know, okay, donkey urine is a liquid, undoubtedly. And donkey urine, I'm sure, could wash off some, if you had, you know, some dirt stuck, because it's a liquid and it's flowing, it can wash off some stuff. But it's also making you stinky and dirty in and of its own right. And it's burning you. But what you need to let go of is the illusion that it's something nice. You need to let go of this self-deceit that what I am doing, my motive, not what I'm doing, but the motive for what I'm doing. When I let go of that, did I have any less energy for Gurukula? No. What do you think I got, in fact?
More.
But you let go of the supposed nice thing, and you let go of the supposed benefit you're getting from it. And when you let go of it, do you know you're going to get as many or more benefits without it?
Maybe not right away.
No, you don't. You don't. This is the thing that's been driving you. You've been driven by whatever it is. This is what's giving you your energy. It's giving you something. And when you let go of it, you're thinking, when I let go of this, I will lose whatever this was giving me. I won't have it anymore. I won't have the supposed benefits. And you have to let go of it on faith. That it's so terrible, and it's so disgusting, and it's so horrible, and it's such an impediment, that even if you lose the benefits from it, it doesn't matter. And when you let go of it, like you let go of all your attachment to it, and you let go of your attachment to it regardless of what price it may be. You know, if you think, well, if I wasn't preaching to impress the women, then I would become like these guys who neglect the women. Is that going to happen?
No.
No. If you let go of preaching to impress the women, would you be a better or worse preacher to the women? Better, because you wouldn't be trying to exploit them. You'd actually be preaching to them. Mm-hmm. Yes,
but if your motivation is helping other devotees,
then that's not donkey urine, that's wonderful. But why are you helping other devotees? That's the question. See, I understood that my motive was helping other devotees. That's how I understood it. I understood it. I am doing this to help the children of the movement that nobody else cares about. That's one symptom, you know. Nobody cares about it but me. I do it better more than others. Those other people, they're not helping the devotees, but I'm doing that. So we take shelter of the mountain holder who can pick up any mountain. I do want to go on and do one more verse. And this prasad has been coming at 8. I think I can do it. Yes?
Yeah.
Okay, because we were supposed to end at 7:30, but now with the Govinda's prasadam doesn't come at 7:30 anymore. So, is that all right?
It's better for me.
Is that all right? Okay. All right. The last verse that we're going to do today. This is the end of the heavy stuff, folks. Starting tomorrow, we just get to pure bliss. So this ends the really heavy heart surgery part of Manashiksha. Okay, everybody ready? Pratista shadrista swapacha ramani ne vidinate kaitam sadhu prema stir sati shuchir etanam mana sada tvam seva sva prabhudaita samantam atulam yata tam nishkasya twarita miyata deshayati sa As long as the unchaste, dog-eating woman of desire for prestige dances in my heart, how can the chaste and pure lady of love for Krishna touch it? Therefore, O mind, you should always serve the incomparable, beloved devotee commander of Krishna's army, who will immediately throw out the unchaste woman and establish the pure lady of love in the heart. And as we noted, this is prema. It's not prema, but prema, which is a feminine form. So Raghunath Das Goswami is talking now. These are people who are swimming in the ocean of love. They have a jewel of love. They're talking about spiritual things. They're doing spiritual things. And they're not even doing it for things like money and subtle sex life and that kind of stuff. They're really trying to do it for a spiritual transformation. And they may feel there's a party going on in their heart. But the food that's being served at the party is a dead dog. Yes?
I hate to interrupt, but I need to get out of the parking lot. It's really 25 minutes.
Okay.
It's
It's not a problem. I'm sorry you're inconvenienced. So people do eat dead dogs. It is food in some parts of the world. But is it a very nice food?
No.
No. Stinky, makes you sick. So this is fame. Fame is like a dead dog. That it looks like food, but it stinks and it putrefies. And if you think of the people who run after fame, what it does to their lives. Right? Most people who run after fame don't get a very good result from doing so. Then there's the desire for fame. The desire for fame is an unchaste, a promiscuous woman. Now, some translations have this her as a prostitute, but it's a different Sanskrit word. So the prostitute was mundane talks, who appears to love you and steals your wealth. So this is a different woman. This woman is simply disloyal. Someone who's promiscuous is disloyal. So why is the desire for fame make you disloyal? Because you'll go wherever you get praised. Right? If you don't praise me, if you correct me, then I leave. I go to someone who praises me. And then he has another woman, the sadhu prema, the chaste ladies of love, and they won't go to that party. You know, like, so I've been in shopping malls where I see a store that might have something that I need, but they're playing this really loud, obnoxious music, right? And you just don't even want to go into the store. You know, sometimes you go in and you just want to get out of it again. So these chaste ladies of love, they will not enter the heart where the party is of the unchaste woman and the dead dog. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in his song commentary, he says that this woman has a lover named deceit or pretentiousness. And we will go to his song commentary. He says, once deceit is cast away, a living being's heart becomes blessed and one enters the city of sacred love. Therefore, take great care to keep pretense far away from you when trying to acquire the jewels of love. Listen, O mind, to these secret words. As long as my audacious desire for fame in the form of a fallen, low-class, dog-eating woman shall remain within my heart, her paramour, deceit, will not stop holding sway over my mind. To cast away that dog-eater, hold on to the feet of the beloved devotees of the Master very carefully, and render a lot of service. Bhaktivinoda weeps, asking, when will the Commander-in-Chief of the Lord take me away chivalrously from the company of the dog-eater and give me the treasure of the love of Radha and Krishna? So she has this lover of deceit. And why, when we want fame and honor, can we be honest? No, we have to present ourselves as something that we're not. Right? And Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that the desire for honor is the root of the plant of deceit and pretentiousness. We talked about this a little bit yesterday at Alachua. So these devotees, what do they want to be famous for?
Being a good devotee.
Being a good devotee, because they are a good devotee. You find somebody on this level of bhakti that's swimming in an ocean of the love of Radha Krishna with a jewel for Radha Krishna. They're not motivated in their service by things like desire for subtler gross sex or money or envy or anger. They're thinking, you know, I'm doing this for spiritual transformation. I'm doing this for Krishna's pleasure. And to a large extent, they are. Okay? They are bathing in an ocean of love. And probably these devotees have awakened some idea of their relationship with Krishna. So what do they want to be famous for? How pure I am. Right? Because they are pretty pure. They really are. I mean, this is the top of the top, you know, in the world. Rare to find somebody on this level. They want to be known, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, for, you know, how much they know the Shastra, how strict they are. And he says all the classes of devotees, the householders who earn a livelihood, the householders who just do bhakti, the renunciates, all have to be careful of this desire to be honored as a good devotee. I am a good devotee. I am pure. I know the esoteric truths of the Shastra, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says. I really know the rasa, the tattva of the Shastras. You hear people talk like this, which goes back to the speech one. You know, I've written this really shows that the inner rasa of what Krishna's saying. Or I can connect all the verses and I know the Sanskrit better than anybody, or like that. Or I don't care about wealth and I don't care about sex and I don't, you know. Look at my room, there's nothing in it, there's just one cardboard box with three books and a gumsho. See? So that's what this is. And this is so, 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 so. Because, again, it seems like it's giving you impetus. Why am I renounced? Why am I dedicated? Because I'm so renounced and dedicated. Do you follow? You know, why am I keeping my vows? Because I keep my vows. Do you understand?
Yes.
And so you think it's wonderful. Why would I not want to think of myself that way? What a lovely thing. And why wouldn't I want someone to come to me and say, how wonderful it is that you're so austere and so dedicated. How wonderful it is, all the wonderful service, and you don't even care about anything. You don't even care about glorification. How wonderful you are for not caring, right? So Arigatas Goswami says to get rid of this one. Now, what I've seen also is it's hard to even see this one unless you've seen the other ones first. If you don't even see what you're talking about, and you don't even see what you're doing, and you don't even see the motives, you're not going to see this driver. This is really the engine, the root. So just to be able to see that this is a root is extremely difficult. He says, you've got to call out for the help of the generals. Now, not just any devotee. And not even just those who are free from deceit. But you've got to call the generals. And these army generals, they will drive out this unchaste woman and her lover out of the heart. And then Krishna himself will drive them out of the heart. And then, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, you enter the beautiful city of love. And the chaste lady enters the heart. So why a general? Well, the person who has this mood thinks that I am a general. I am the general in the Lord's army. Yes? Isn't that how these people are thinking? Now that may be true even if you're just like a humble pujari who just does the same service every day. It doesn't mean that you're necessarily a frontline preacher in this situation. But you're thinking, I have done the same service for these same deities every day for 40 years without complaining. I am a general in the Lord's army. So the point is to serve the real generals, to become the servant. To remember, I'm a servant of the generals. Not just to call for their help, but to be their servant. I'm not a general, I'm a servant of the generals. This mood gets this woman out of the heart and this dog flesh out of the heart. Really giving whatever honor we may receive, just giving it to our master you know, this goes to my guru, this goes to the great generals in the Lord's army. It's just not, I'm a foot soldier. Or maybe I'm not even a foot soldier. Maybe I'm just, you know, a pot washer in the army. And this mood. But this is so, so difficult, isn't it? Because that's why we're here in the material world, because we want to be served. But Thich Nhat Hanh Kor talks about how we can get this service and benediction from the generals, the embrace of the devotee, the foot dust of the devotee, the food remnants of the devotee. This is Narada Muni taking the food remnants of the Bhakti Vinodas. The water from washing the feet of a devotee. Here's Krishna washing the feet of Sudama Brahmana. And then spiritual potency, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, flows from the heart of a great devotee into our heart. And that spiritual potency drives away this disloyal woman and her dog. Now, those were all humbling things, weren't they? Taking the foot bath water? Mm-hmm. I mean, that you know, people look at us and think, isn't that rather cultish?
Yeah.
You know, they do. They look at it and say, well, that's kind of cultish, isn't it? Those are all very humbling. Those get you in the mood of a servant. Krishna's taking the foot bathing water of Sudama, taking the dust from a devotee's feet, doing menial service for the devotee. This is the general, not me. This is a general, not me. I mean, we had a problem when Prabhupada left that, you know, we had this zonal acharya system and we had people who said, now I'm the general, so those of you who were there then. Yes? Now I'm the big general. I've supplanted my guru as the general. And it didn't work very well. And when we do this, when we get in this mood of being a servant of the genuine generals, then the chaste ladies of love enter our heart. And this is a Leela, Krishna's Kaviraj tells, where the gopis, after bathing in Radhakund, they are getting dressed for Krishna's pleasure. Now, ordinary woman gets dressed so she can make men lusty and women envious. An ordinary woman tries to become attractive. But these women, they're not like that. Their mood is, I just simply want to please Krishna. So these sadhu prema, they enter the heart. Wouldn't it be nice to have the gopis in our heart?
Yeah.
Yes. And now we are ready tomorrow. Now we're finished with all the hard stuff and the cleansing and the, you know, and we're ready then to enter into the door of perfection. I'm going to go through now the stages of perfection starting tomorrow. So any other discussion, especially on text 8? Yes.
Should we recognize these things and work on them, or engage in devotional in those activities to get them from the heart, or both?
Should we do them intentionally? The answer is yes, we should work on these intentionally. So the first one was think about what you say. You should intentionally work on what you say, yes. Work on what you do. Yes, intentionally work on what you do. Work on your motives. Yes, definitely. But that's part of devotional service. It's not something separate. It's not that I'm doing devotional service from, you know, 4 a.m. to 2 p.m. and then from 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. I make a special effort to do this. That's separate from devotional service. It's just like we're vegetarian as part of our devotional service. But does that mean you don't read the labels on the food? Do you just go to the market and you just chant Hare Krishna and throw anything into your cart? You pick it up and you read it and some of it says, you know, pig fat, and you don't buy it. Do you understand? So what's the main thing we're offering to Krishna?
Love.
Love. Devotion. A devotion of our self. I'm offering me to Krishna. I mean, Krishna's happy to get, you know, Chaitanya was so happy to offer that lettuce from the garden. She was running around giving everybody pieces of lettuce prasad. It was really sweet. Imagine handing people pieces of lettuce. It was so sweet. But the main thing we're offering Krishna, sorry to say this here in the Krishna house, this is like, must be heavy heresy in Krishna house, is not food. Now your husband will never let me come back again. So the main thing we're offering is not food. The main thing we're offering is ourself. Keep offering food, everyone. The main thing we're offering is ourself. And just like when we offer Krishna food, we want to offer him food that's not contaminated. As far as we can in Kali Yuga, I mean, you can't find anything that's totally pure in Kali Yuga, forget it, even if you grow in your own garden. But as far as possible, we're not just going to be negligent. That's part of our offering. It's not a separate, it's not some separate endeavor. So when I'm offering myself to Krishna, part of my offering to Krishna, what am I going to offer Krishna myself covered with donkey urine? Am I going to offer Krishna myself with some prostitute hanging out of my heart? And some tigers biting my ear? And a rope around my neck that envy's pulling me all over the place? And I'm being covered with donkey urine and there's a dead dog in my heart with this crazy lady and her masked lover? And that's how I'm going to offer myself to Krishna? Here I am, Krishna! Oh. Well, I'm glad you showed up, but, you know, I don't think we're going to let you inside. Nice to see you at the door. You know, but I think you kind of stink up the party. Is that all right? I'm going to work on that also. Yes?
When you were talking about how, like, happy and well-situated you felt when you first started your service, like, doing it the wrong way.
Yeah.
Could you, like, explain that feeling versus when you got that out of your heart?
Because, oh,
like,
thank you, Sita. Well, this is an example I give all the time.
In regards to, like, because oftentimes when I get this, like, confident feeling in my Krishna, like, I'm doing good. Like, then there's this, like, automatic, like, Hare Krishna red flag, like, oh, like, that's not being humble, or something must be wrong. But that's not always. Sometimes can't you just be like, yeah, like, I made some advancement or something? And just be,
well,
like,
Deb, can you be happy that you've made some advancement? Yes. Yes.
Or, like,
let's answer both those questions.
Yeah.
Let's answer the second question first. So look at Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. After he was purified, he said, my dear Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you have saved the whole world. That's not a big credit. He said, the big credit is you saved me. He said, you have turned a crow into Garuda. What was he saying? I am now Garuda. You follow?
Because of Mahaprabhu.
Because of Mahaprabhu.
Yeah, not because he...
Exactly. So there's a big difference between I'm a great devotee because I'm so dedicated to Gurukula. I'm a great devotee because I do this. I'm a great devotee because I do this. I am a great devotee because I have this personality and I have this, I come from this, whatever it may be. Somebody's going to be because I come from this family. I am in the family line of Lord Nityananda. Therefore, I'm a great devotee. Someone else is going to be, you know, I chant so many rounds, therefore I'm a great devotee. And someone else is going to be, you know, I'm fully dedicated to book distribution, and therefore I'm a great devotee. Whatever it may be. And that's very different from, the Lord has given me undeserved causeless mercy and taken away my dirty things in my heart, and therefore I am not a great devotee, but I am enlivened in Krishna consciousness. Mm-hmm. I am a very small devotee. I am a crow. I am nothing. And by the way, that's a much happier feeling.
Yes.
So what's the difference, was your second question? One is false and one is real.
Well, I guess, like, in how you were, when you look back in retrospect, you're like, oh, that happy feeling I was feeling is nothing compared to...
Not only is it nothing compared to it, but it had all this burning wrapped up in it.
So is that the key point?
Yes, one is false and one is real. It's just like, I always give the example of chemical fruit juice versus, you know, organic, locally grown, kicked from the tree in your backyard fruit juice. The taste is different. The experience is different. When you eat healthy food and unhealthy food, the taste is different. Your digestion is different. Your energy is different. Yes?
So if there's humility in your feeling of, like, confidence and happiness, but there's humility in there, then you should probably...
Also, we all can sense something that's authentic. Yes, it's mixed with humility, and it doesn't have any nastiness mixed with it. You're also happy at other people's stuff. Yeah. I also like in Street Tape Letter that C.S. Lewis said, "When the church is built, you're just as happy as if someone else built it.
Right.
You're not happy because you grew the lettuce. You're happy because the lettuce is grown, and you're just as happy whether you grew the lettuce or Krishnadas grew the lettuce.
What about, okay.
And you're not having this burning envy of others' situation. But it feels authentic. We can all recognize something that's authentic. We all have that capacity to recognize something that's authentic. That's a simple example. So you're in the kirtan, and the kirtan leader is really expert. They have a beautiful voice. They know how to play their harmonium. The mridanga player knows all the fancy beads. Actually, in Jai Dharmaraj's commentary in verse 6, he talks about this now. You know, and everything is, and you're enjoying the kirtan. Now, you could be similarly enjoying a musical concert, you know, down at the park that had beautiful singing and like that. But sometimes, at least, we're enjoying the kirtan that can't be explained by the music. You're getting a pleasure from the kirtan that you cannot explain by the quality of the music. It's a different level of happiness. It's a different quality of happiness. And I like to give the example of the cookies in Puerto Rico. The Puerto Rico cookies story. You know, we were going to a university preaching program that night, and one devotee, I think her name is Kamagaitri, was in the kitchen cooking cookies while I was making the main deity offering. So I saw her make the cookies. It was sugar, butter, flour, some vanilla, baking soda. I mean, you just couldn't get any more basic. It was the most basic cookie recipe you could possibly have. So we took them to the university. I gave a talk, and after my talk, they were distributing the cookies. I didn't eat any of them because I was answering questions. One of the regrets of my life that I didn't, seriously, I didn't eat those cookies. Out of 120 people, maybe 40, 50 people came up to me. What's in those cookies? Professors, students, you know, can I get the recipe? And I'm thinking, you're going to be awfully disappointed if you get this. They were experiencing a happiness that could not be explained by the material elements. And we all have this experience. We read something in Prabhupada's books, and we have an experience of happiness that cannot be explained just by the fact that it's logical or interesting. There's something that can't be explained by the music, that can't be explained by the ingredients, that the thing we're doing, the sensory thing we're doing, doesn't match the happiness that we're feeling. We're feeling a different quality of happiness, not just even quantity. It may be a different quantity exactly if we're beginners, but the quality is different. We're thinking, that's real. You know, our sense enjoyment is not real because we're not this body. But spiritual enjoyment, even for the neophyte, is real. So the enjoyment you get when you give up some of this stuff and you get, it feels authentic. Yes?
Yeah. For myself, I feel I am still in the level, just like every creature in the universe, of the pursuit for happiness. Sure, I get instead of getting happiness from drinking beer and eating steak, I get happiness from serving Krishna or hearing a wonderful class or bhajan, but I'm still the center of my life. I want happiness. It's not love for Krishna. So yes, there is a much higher level of happiness, much more spiritual and real, whatever, but I'm still in the pursuit of happiness. It's like an ant or a dog or a cow. But I get my happiness on a way more spiritual and advanced level.
So what verse is she describing?
This is me, I'm...
What is this verse that she's describing?
You have the lower taste buds.
Yeah, but which one of these verses in Manashiksha is she describing?
Three?
No. That we just did it today, these two verses. 6 and 7. I'm doing service for Krishna for the purpose of my own happiness.
Yes.
Which verse is that?
What? 6?
Yes, 6. It's the donkey year. It's I'm doing service to Krishna, but my motive is not to please Krishna, my motive is my own happiness. Now in 7, your motive is to please Krishna, but you want to be famous for it. In 7, your motive is not your own happiness, exactly. Almost. But it still is sort of.
How do you switch this mode of being the center of your life versus forgetting about yourself and just doing out of love.
Well, that's what he's saying. That's what Swami says. To get rid of this, you have to swim in the ocean of love. So up till there, you just have a jewel of love. You have a jewel of love. And you will get some authentic experiences. Even the very beginner in spiritual life gets some authentic experiences. We do get authentic experiences. We do have moments when we're not like that. And we go, wow, what was that? But to be there, it's what you're talking about, recognizing that, wait a minute, my motives are wrong. And really, really asking Krishna to show you them for what they are. Which is beyond just saying, you know, okay, my motives are wrong. Ask him to show you. Ask him to pick one. Say, pick one of these, of these ways that I'm trying to be happy in the name of service. And show me. And give me the courage to let go of it. And you do let go of it by swimming in this ocean of love. You know, you really do. I don't know how to explain it much better than that. It is what it is. That's what it is. You look at the thing and you go, oh my God, this is donkey urine. It's not a bath. Let me, Krishna, show me what it is. Not just a little bit. Not just like, yeah, okay, I'm doing it for my own happiness. All right, no, that's too bad. How do I get out of it? But looking at it, we want to become, and I think these heavy analogies are used, we want to become so disgusted by this thing. We want to see it as disgusting. We don't want to see it as just, well, this is what everybody else is doing, and what can I do? I'm so fallen, blah, blah. We want to see this thing that's driving me is actually disgusting. It's horrible. It's stinky. It's burning. It's torturing. And I don't care what supposed benefit I'm getting from this. I don't want it any. I'm so revolted by it. Now, we can be revolted by it because we're still somewhat self-centered. Or we can be revolted by it because we kind of see love for Krishna around the corner there. And we've had these authentic tastes and we want that. Or some combination of it. That we realize that not only is this disgusting, and not only am I really don't want to be this kind of person, but also, you know, I want to get a little more. I've gotten a few free samples there. And I want to buy the whole jar. And I can't. Because they won't let me into the party. I can't. I stink. And I want that. I really want that. You know, I really, really want that. And when that feeling intensifies enough, you will just simply let go of that attachment. You will just let it go, and Krishna will take it away. And you'll feel this authentic feeling of being in an ocean of love, at least to some extent. And the more that you do that over and over and over, pretty soon, your life is swimming in an ocean of love. And you're not done then. You still have the lady in the heart. But that's pretty cool. It is. It's pretty wonderful. It's each of these steps is a big step. You always want to look at in Manushiksha that even though there's still a problem remaining, you know, what have we done so far? And how, even if you're at the step where you can say that, is huge. That you can say that honestly, because that's very difficult. You know, most people on the path are still in the mood that I'm good. And my motives are good. And I really am working for Krishna's pleasure when they're not. So that's a huge step. But ask to see it. And Krishna can do it. You know, I can't do it. We can't do it. We're not powerful enough to do it. We're not. No, but this ocean of love at the feet of Radha Krishna is so powerful. You know, you think about an ocean. We've all seen an ocean, yes? It's powerful. It's huge. Once you allow it, there's nothing that stands in its way. It knocks you over, you know. It's irrelevant. An ocean is powerful. So it's just a question of our allowing it. Of our having, it takes courage. It's a question of having courage and allowing. I think I'll take one more, then we do have to stop for tonight. Yes?
Well, so there was a point in my life, a Shiksha guru of mine was mentioning, that was trying to show me that I was a little bit judgmental. And the thing I was being judgmental about was that there were some people so body conscious that they went to gyms all the time and they got robust and
stuff, right?
And so that Shiksha guru, my brother, mentioned that Arjuna might have been doing that very same thing in service to Krishna as a Kshatriya.
Yes.
And so part of me thinks and wonders, like, is there ever a stage in bhakti where, you know, to prefer the football game to the, I mean, you know, to, we mentioned something about preferring a football game and you don't want to turn it off. You know, is there a stage in bhakti that you're, that's part of your, where you are?
What's part of where you are?
To be preferring the football game.
Well, that's a kind of donkey urine, if you're preferring the football game. If you present yourself as an advanced devotee, you prefer the football game.
Right.
So that's a kind of donkey urine. But also a donkey kind of donkey urine is you think you're better than people who are working out. You know, Madhvacharya worked out too. So it depends on where, you know, what your perspective is. And that's one of the reasons that Bhaktivinoda Thakur talks about different categories of devotees, and how they tend to get into this working for their own pleasure in the name of service. So I can do it by thinking, well, I'm more renounced than that person. Maybe you are more renounced than that person. Maybe you genuinely are. But if that's what's giving you your happiness, if that's your driver, you follow? If what's giving you your impetus and your enthusiasm is, well, I wouldn't work out at the gym, then that's just your, you know, your donkey named Sally and their donkey named Jilly, you know. And maybe they're working out at the gym because it really helps their health and their service. How do you know? How do you know whether they're working out at the gym is that they prefer taking care of the body to taking care of the soul, or whether they're working out at the gym because it makes a huge difference for their health and they're seeing the body as Krishna's temple, you know? I really should end now. It is after 8 o'clock. We will meet again tomorrow, Krishna willing. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.